All right. Well, now we're going to get an update on the Redwood Coast Energy Authority. I believe, and I'll bring Matthew Marshall on board here, or at least it's the phone number for Matt.
Blue, yep.
Is this Matt?
Yes.
Hi, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, let's see. We have about 15 minutes, so take 7 or 10 minutes as needed and give us an update on how things are going, and really in particular, what is differentiating your program that's kind of the next phase of thinking and community choice.
So just the status update is we launched in May and did, you know, the majority of our enrollment, with the exception of some net metering customers that we're doing in phases around their trip dates, all switched over, and so far so good, and we're you know, now in whatever this is, week 8 or so of operation, so everything's going pretty well. As far as, you know, what makes us maybe unique, I mean, there's a couple questions that were kind of posed to me before the call, and so, you know, one thing, I don't know if this is unique, but we've a particular focus on trying to support local renewables, partly because we're a geographically grid isolated kind of area, so you know, there isn't enough transmission capacity to actually bring power in to meet our load, and so from a, you know, real world perspective, you know, we need local generation to actually keep the lights on here in Humboldt County, and so, you know, partly due to that, and also just to really focus on more of the economic benefits as well as the environmental benefits. Our kind of marching orders from my board have really been to focus on maximizing the use of local renewable resources, which out of the gate, biomass is a big part of that because we're a forested region with a lot of local mills that generate waste. And so that, you know, mill waste is a historic source of baseload renewables. And so we've got about 12% starting out in 2017 that's going to be from local renewables, and then an overall mix of about 40% renewable and 80% greenhouse gas free. As far as kind of on the operational side of it, you know, there's mentioned earlier was TEA, who we've contracted with as our you know, power resources management consultant, and so I think as far as how that relationship works, you know, you basically there we're able to kind of use their procurement capacity to go out and do our power procurement. And so if you're not familiar with TEA, they're a nonprofit that provides power management services to municipal utilities across the country. And so they, you know, have, starting with us, entered into kind of the CCA realm, and really basically bringing kind of that background is helpful for us because they've got, you know, both the sort of analytic capabilities to do forecasting and sophisticated, you know, modeling, you know, to help us manage risk. And then basically we're able to use their trading desk to execute our procurement process. And so it's a little bit different than the sort of like doing an RFP and getting responses. And so our master agreement with them basically sets up them to be able to go out and do transactions on our behalf. And so that enables us to basically use all of their master service agreements. So, you know, instead of having to go and negotiate, you know, a master agreement with all these counterparties, we can just, you know, use the 60 or something that they have in the CAISO market, and you know, pretty it makes it a more efficient process. And so our procurement decision making is basically guided by our board as far as the policy level of what, you know, percentage of different resources they want us to pursue, and you know, kind of the big picture goals of the program. And then we have an internal risk management team that staff, a TEA representative, and an outside independent representative that kind of, you know, vet the individual kind of transactions and process for doing that procurement. And then, you know, once, you know, we approve that, they go out and they execute the trades. And so it's nice because it gives us a lot of flexibility. It, you know, gives us a good kind of capabilities right out of the gate, in the sense of instead of having to, you know, build up all that infrastructure, it's right off the bat. And then also they're providing the credit, so they're basically, you know, for those transactions with those counterparties, you know, we're piggybacking on TEA's, you know, credit capacity, and so it let us do it without, you know, having a lot of money in the bank and a credit rating. And it's good for transparency in the sense that, you know, we have a lot of visibility into, well, we have full visibility into exactly what we're paying for, you know, June resource adequacy and you know, what our pricing is. And, you know, and again, the ability to kind of go out and, you know, be fairly nimble through them in the market. You know, so far for just 2017, I think we've executed something like 20 different transactions with like over a dozen counterparties for energy, for renewables, for resource adequacy. And, you know, we know exactly what June RA is costing and how our hedges are performing against market prices for this month. And so, you know, it's the transactions they execute are just pass-through. So we pay them like a, you know, basically a consulting fee for their services. But when they go out and do a trade, it's just a one-to-one pass-through. They don't mark up, you know, whatever that, you know, renewable agreement was. And so that's kind of how it's functioning. And so far, so good. And we feel like it's working well. And it's also helpful to have that flexibility for our goals of integrating local renewables, because they can kind of adaptively manage the process even this first year. Like, we were keeping, you know, chunks of it open while we were negotiating contracts for local renewables. And so, you know, they can kind of fill in the gaps if things are taking longer. And it gives us some good flexibility to not lock ourselves into bigger, you know, chunks of commitment when we're trying to slot in local resources.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Great. Well, let's go ahead and open up to questions, folks. If you just press *61, we can get in the queue to ask some questions to for Redwood Coast Energy. Here's a question from Sam Golding.
Hi, Matthew. Thanks so much. That's a really exciting update. It's really apparent how deep your insights are into really the fundamentals of power operations at this point. I mean, you've just launched, and listening to you describe how risk is being managed and renewables are being integrated from an operational perspective is really kind of an industry first. We never hear any CCA CEO speak in these terms, really. It's all very high level. You've been working with TEA, and I'm really curious to know more about how that kind of educational process is going. What sort of support are you getting from them for your staff development? And like, it sounds like everything's very transparent and you're basically operating like a mature utility with full insight into everything. Are you training staff and bringing on staff for procurement and that sort of thing?
Yeah, so we've got our internal staff, and you know, partly because of our geographic location, you know, we've got folks that are very knowledgeable about energy in general, but not necessarily utility operations. And so, you know, it's been certainly for me and others a learning curve on that part of it. And that's where, you know, it's helpful in the sense that, you know, TEA knows what they're doing, and you know they know how to run, you know, a utility procurement operation, but you know it's not just a black box. And so, you know, for example, you know, we have our, you know, monthly risk management team meetings, which, you know, we look at, you know, market fundamentals of, you know, what are gas prices doing, what's hydro doing, and, you know, what are, you know, sort of trends and you know, any, you know, anything that's, you know, raising, you know, eyebrows as far as risk management. And then the other part of that is really a lot of kind of training and getting us up to speed, frankly, on a lot of the details of, like, well, this is how congestion revenue rights auctions work and how we're going to be participating in that and you know, the different flavors of resource adequacy and, you know, how we need to meet our, you know, different requirements for those types of products and, you know, what our strategy is for, you know, procurement. And so, you know, I think in the early stages, it's a lot of, you know, them explaining kind of the process of what needs to get done for compliance, them, you know, making a recommendation of what they see as a good strategy and explaining what that, you know, the justification behind us and us, you know, then signing off on that decision. I think, you know, as we get a little bit more savvy, you know, it'll be, you know, we'll have more internal capacity to, you know, have our own opinions on some of these things. And not that we're necessarily going to, you know, disagree, but, you know, just to be able to have it be a little bit, you know, more of like, hey, this is what we want to do, you know, around, you know, price hedging for next year and, you know, having it be, you know, a dialogue. But they've been providing a lot of training, you know, on a pretty much weekly basis. There'll be some, you know, webinar that we'll do with their staff about, you know, some nuance of the procurement side of things.
And did you build training into the contract?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of it's not like a specific like line item, like here's our budget for training, but you know, the overall kind of structure was to say, hey, you know, we want somebody that can like get us off the ground and running, but also is going to help us, you know, build our own capacity. So that was part of the way we framed our RFP and I will say, you know, they've actually been going kind of above and beyond what we were expecting on the training side. You know, I was expecting some training and more of like, hey, and here's a course you guys should all take or something like that. But they've been doing a lot of it just in-house, and that's been very helpful.
Awesome. Fantastic. Great. Well, thanks for that question and comment, Sam. Here's a question from Al Weinrub.
Oh, just to follow up. Thanks, Matthew, for being on the line. So, could you give an idea of, like, have you been able, you know, I'm interested in terms of the kind of contract you signed with TEA, like, how long is the contract? And in terms of the price that you're paying for the services they provide, have you been able to measure the extent to which, you know, you've gotten value out of those services? Do you have a way of quantifying that or demonstrating that those services have already saved you, you know, a significant amount of money in terms of your operations? And other than the fact that you've been able to phase in some of your local procurement more easily, are there other benefits that are provided in terms of being able to integrate other kinds of local or, you know, distributed energy resources? I guess that's a multi hard question, but just trying to get a little bit more what this looks like.
Yeah, so the agreement we have with them was a 5-year term, and so the first year of that was, you know, doing the technical analysis and everything, you know, leading up to our launch in May. So it was about a year's worth of work of, you know, getting the implementation plan filed and all of that. And the payment for that first year of services was deferred until we were up and running and, you know, had Buddy coming in to be able to pay back. So that was helpful for us because we had to bootstrap it. We didn't have any, you know, budget to basically launch the program. And so being able to kind of defer those startup costs, which weren't large, but still, you know, were enough that, you know, it would be a challenge for us. And then as far as the value of it, you know, it's hard to say because there isn't like an apples to apples comparison. I mean, I when we went through the RFP process, we had 4 responses, and, you know, so we compared, you know, what services were being offered and, you know, what the costs were, and so, you know, and you know, did some other research to see like, well, okay, what is, you know, what's sort of the going rate for scheduling coordination and things like that, which is a little bit hard actually initially because some of that's sort of baked into like a lot of the sort of full requirements contracts that other CCAs have gone with. And so trying to find a price of like, what are you guys paying for scheduling coordination wasn't actually an answer that was available from other CCAs initially. And so, you know, we're a small community. We've only got a population of like 135,000 for the whole county. And so, you know, it's hard for me to say like, well, what would be the sort of, you know, cost per megawatt hour for another, you know, to do exactly what we're doing. I would say, you know, the overall performance has been pretty good in that, you know, we've been able to hit our goals for renewables, having lower rates than PG&E, and we're on track to have a $6 million reserve built up by the end of the first 12 months of operation. And so, you know, I think the overall performance is pretty good. But And you know, 6 million is small compared to some of the other CCAs, but again, with our size, that's a pretty good start out of the gate for building a reserve. So I feel like we're getting a good value. You know, I'd have to kind of, I haven't gone through the exercise of trying to say, well, like, what would be, you know, something comparable, since there isn't, you know, necessarily a good apples to apples, you know, way to see what other folks are paying, you know, based off of size and when you started and, you know, PCIA vintage and all that. So, and as far as the local other, you know, distributed resources, I think, you know, that's something that we've historically, you know, that's our kind of bread and butter is energy efficiency, electric vehicle charging infrastructure. You know, that's what we've been doing since 2003. As far as the relationship with TEA, I think, you know, they're sort of neutral to how we want to implement the program. I mean, besides the fact that they want to be successful, obviously, and so they're not going to, you know, be real supportive if we want to do something that's going to make us crash and burn. But beyond that, you know, if we say, hey, we want to include this much solar in our projections, they can, you know, they'll roll that into the models and do the analysis. And I think, you know, maybe where there is value is that their analytic abilities can have been very helpful in us kind of running different scenarios of like, well, okay, under, you know, favorable, unfavorable future market conditions, you know, what are the tolerances if we want to do this much, you know, distributed resources at this price, and being able to kind of forecast out what the impacts will be in you know, in various scenarios. But for the most part, you know, they can just bake that stuff into their modeling and forecasting and other procurement, you know, as we want to roll stuff out.
Thank you.
Great. Well, I think we've got time for one more question if someone wants to join us in the queue. Well, I don't see anybody popping up at this moment, but let me ask you, in terms of your resource planning going forward for the next few years, how are you thinking about that and preparing for you know, more local generation and those sorts of priorities that you were talking about?
Yeah, so you know, in the near term, so my board adopted kind of guidelines that were sort of our guiding principles, and you know, and we looked at various scenarios in our technical study, and then kind of, you know, developed some guidelines around what we thought was, you know, feasible to accomplish while maintaining competitive rates with PG&E. And so, you know, in the near term, we're looking at, you know, new solar and, you know, customer programs, whether it's solar on the customer side of the meter, you know, storage and those kinds of things. And so I think, you know, we've kind of been focusing on just the near-term targets while also looking, you know, longer term down the road, as far as, you know, we've got great, like, offshore wind resources up here, some of the best in the country. And so, you know, that's something where we want to kind of start laying the groundwork for pursuing those long-term goals, but also trying to get, you know, solar is a little bit, you know, lower-hanging fruit. And so we've got pretty aggressive kind of, you know, for our size, like we're talking about 15 megawatts or so in the first, you know, the first phase of operation, you know, next 4 or 5 years. And so, which, you know, for our county would be like quite a bit. So yeah, I guess it's really just, you know, we're budgeting it into kind of our planning process and making sure that we're, you know, kind of setting targets and then and doing our other procurement in a way that, you know, we're not locking in, like, you know, 90% of our load for the next 4 years so that we don't have any room, you know, to add anything new. We're you know, doing for the market side of it, you know, shorter term procurement, and that also helps us manage kind of risk around the PCIA. And so rather than locking things in, we're kind of using a little bit more of a defensive strategy, and you know, and playing off the kind of PCIA process to do our market procurement, so that we can kind of balance that out against longer term goals and commitments for local renewables.
Great, really fantastic update, and we're excited for your launch and for to see how things are continue to go moving forward. So thank you for joining us, Matthew, and keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Great. Now we're going to move into a legislative update in our last 5 minutes with